the United Nations considers a war stopped even more important than a war won.
If our cities go down, in my opinion, our nation will go down.
You have to think about your dream and what you want to do.
All we were trying to do was just get music for all people.
If you ever hear the terms Great Lakes and smuggling, you might think of whiskey running during the Prohibition. But did you know there was a different kind of smuggling along the Wisconsin border until the late 1960s? It's Wednesday, which means it's time to talk our state's history with our partners at the Michigan History Center. And back with us today is Rachel Clark. So, Rachel, the smuggling we're about to discuss does not involve guns or alcohol or beaver pelts, but rather?
Oleomargarine.
Oleomargarine.
Yes.
Well, I know our younger listeners are going, oleomargarine, what is oleomargarine? So as probably the resident senior, I'm going to explain, because I remember doing this with my grandmother. You would have a brick of white stuff, and in it was a little button, and you would squeeze it, and out would come a yellow dye, and you would knead it together, and you had yellow oleomargarine, which I believe, I love the description that it was the working man's spread. So how did this become illegal?
Well, when margarine came out, it was a cheap substitute for butter. So the butter industry began lobbying for rules and regulations against its sale and distribution. And these laws were particularly strict in Wisconsin. So people started going into Michigan from Wisconsin and the UP and buying up oleomargarine and bringing it home with them. So there was a smuggling ring right at the border of Dickinson County.
When you think that margarine was developed during Napoleon's time in France, so was there a butter cartel trying to block the insidious spread of margarine?
Not quite that bad. It got pretty interesting, though, in the late 1800s. Napoleon III found he needed to feed his troops and the people of France with something cheaper than butter, more readily available than butter, and that lasted longer. So he put out almost this competition with a money prize to somebody that could come up with something. And so a French chemist named Hippolyte Mesmery, sorry if I just butchered his name.
Very good.
he came up with this butter substitute that we know today as oleomargarine.
Amazing. What were the tactics that were used and the arguments used to keep people from buying this yellow oleo?
It's kind of entertaining to look at it today. The butter industry started out with a tax at oleomargarine as being lowbrow and low class, evil and threatening to human and public health. And then in the mid-1880s, you start to actually see laws on the books, taxes and tariffs against the ingredients in oleo. You also get laws in Michigan where places that sell and produce oleo, they actually have to put signs up that say, "We use oleo," because they were saying, "Hey, we have great butter," and it wasn't butter. And there weren't any laws against that at the time.
So truth in advertising.
Absolutely. And then finally, in the 1890s, it becomes completely illegal in Michigan to manufacture or distribute oleomargarine. But those laws are impossible to regulate. People were doing it anyway. And so they start to lighten up a little bit in Michigan with it. By the mid-20th century, it starts to wane a little bit.
So Michigan lightened up, Wisconsin didn't. So there's this, you know, contraband smuggling of oleomargarine into Wisconsin.
There is. Some of the more interesting things, too, had to do with the color. As you mentioned earlier, oleo in its norm, sort of natural form, if you will, is a white color. And so they would add yellow. It actually started out in the company, they would add yellow coloring. And that was false advertising, according to Michigan law. And so the Congress actually imposed a tax on anything that was using yellow dye. And so margarine manufacturers just started using vegetable oil instead of animal oil in their product, and then adding these little packets so you could color it at home. So they were avoiding that tax by letting the public and the consumers color it at home.
I didn't. And who knew that when my grandmother was letting me help her knead that package of margarine, we were beating a tax.
Yep, absolutely.
So when did this stop being a thing?
Well, as I said, in the mid-20th century, oleo starts winning out. The Depression made it so people had to look at cheaper alternatives to butter, and oleo was that natural sort of, or not natural, but with that, that obvious cheaper option. At that time, you start seeing products like Parquet and Blue Bonnet. They come up in the 30s and 40s as these margarine spreads. And then World War II, the butter that is being produced in the United States is being shipped off to soldiers in Europe. So again, you get this increase in the use of oleo. And then by the 1960s, American laws start to lessen as a whole, and you can have them in public institutions and schools, and the military can use it in cooking. So for the whole United States, except for Wisconsin, by the 1960s, the laws against oleo have lightened up, if not gone away entirely.
And do we know if Wisconsin has finally dropped its legal opposition to
oleo? I think they have. I imagine if I looked closely, there would still be laws on the books in Wisconsin, but I think they finally realized the same thing that Michigan did, that it's really hard and expensive to pursue lawsuits against companies or individuals that are violating these laws. But the smuggling continued up through the 1960s and into the early 70s. Wisconsin people would drive into Iron Mountain or Kingston in the Upper Peninsula, buy as much oleo margarine as they could, and then drive it back home into Wisconsin.
That's the Michigan History Center's Rachel Clark. Thanks so much, Rachel, for sharing this story of oleo margarine smuggling from Michigan's not-too-distant past. Thanks so much.
Thank you.